The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm glad that you could join me for another Saturday afternoon program. I'm watching, as usual, my sound level slowly coming up, but today I'm going to go directly to my guest who is here, and I'm very happy to welcome Paul Hickman, who is an English nationalist activist and a radio program host of Radio Albion. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Carolyn. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I certainly thank you. I'm very glad to have you on, and for several reasons. But before we get into maybe let's just talk a little bit about you. And I would like to know to introduce people to your website. Probably a lot of listeners already know about it. And talk a little bit about how you got into doing radio podcasts and that. So your website is Birmingham Nationalist 2, all one word.
Yes, that's correct. The reason the 2's in there, because I did have the Birmingham Nationalist a couple of years ago, and I did a story about, well, it was an article from a newspaper called The Sun about some young girls who had been pimped out by a black lady in an area of London called Barking and Dagenham. And the MP there is quite a powerful woman, Jewish woman, called Margaret Hodge, her real name Oppenheimer. And as soon as I'd put that post out, I didn't even get any warning. The blog was just deleted, all the work gone and everything. So that's the reason why it's got 2 in there. But if people just Google Birmingham Nationalist, they'll find it easy enough.
Okay, right. Googling sometimes is the best way, but also I want to let them know that it's birminghamnationalist2.blogspot.com. Mm-hmm. Boy, it's just amazing how things like that can happen, how you could have gotten taken down like that without any warning by that woman. Now, why has she left your current one alone? Have you toned down? Are you not in her district doing protests now, huh?
I haven't really toned it down. People warn me sometimes to tone it down because we haven't got the First Amendment over here, but her name really hasn't come up in any news, so I haven't reported it. If it was to, then I would do again, but I do know how to back up the blog now, so I back it up about once a week.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Well, we live and we learn, don't we? Well, you have been you have said you don't have any problem giving your age. You're 33 years old, and you have said that you've been an activist since 2003. So for 10 years now, you started when you were 23. And you want to tell us? I'm very interested to hear about how you got into all this and became active.
Yeah, sure. I mean, through my experience living in Birmingham, I mean, I've always been kind of a minority myself. The part of Birmingham where I grew up in, I was a minority because it was mostly Asian. And then at school, it was, again, mostly Pakistani Muslims. So there was conflict there. I mean, I saw it from when I was in the kind of first year. An older boy in like the fourth or fifth year, he was getting jumped at the school gates, you know, beaten on by 4 or 5 of them. And usually there would be a teacher at the gates, but there wasn't that day. And I thought, well, this is obviously what's to come, unless you kind of look at the floor and, you know, take abuse, which I chose not to do. So I always wanted to get involved in some kind of nationalism, but that time would have been the mid-90s. I left school in 1996, but I hadn't heard of the British National Party then. I had heard of the National Front. I remember one girl asking me, what do you want to do when you leave? And I says, well, I think my future's with the NF. And she says, what, against blacks as well? I goes, well, yeah, really. I mean, look how they are. And she didn't agree with that. But
now, what is it with these? How did you understand why all these British high school kids, whatever, just couldn't agree with caring about what's going to happen to white British people?
Well, what can you say? We've got the BBC over here, which is a very powerful kind of mind-washing tool, really. And it's the kind of same thing you've got over there, really. You know, the worst thing on earth you can be is a racist, quote-unquote. But with the blacks who have grown up over here, number one, they've got English-sounding names because of the history. They've not got African names. Number two, they're quite light, a lot of them, again, due to history from that period. And they haven't got their own culture kind of thing. Like the later wave we see now in England, the Somalis, the Nigerians and Eritreans and so forth, they are very different. Obviously, the Muslim ones wear the Muslim clothes and they've got their own language and they're just very different how they do things. Whereas the black British, you might call them, some people don't like that, but, you know, in quotes, they really have grown up with us. They've got the same kind of names.
And they speak with the same accent. They speak the same, too, for the most part, right?
Yeah,
which always sounds strange to someone like me when you see these blacks on TV or something, and all of a sudden they're speaking with this British accent. And
yeah, that's right, but the kind of the youth kind of thing is becoming kind of niggerized or wiggerized. The way I look at it, their DNA is a dominant DNA and our DNA is a recessive DNA, as you'll know. But I think it goes further than just characteristics of, you know, eye color, hair texture. And it goes further than behavior, which I do believe the behavior is in the DNA. It always comes out eventually. Which people, unfortunately, they have to learn the hard way. I mean, I learned early on, so it's not like me learning the hard way, although it's been reinforced. But it's like that, really. I think that's why the youth have a hard time of realizing the kind of the danger. And now their behavior is kind of dominant, so they talk in a way which is not real English. And they'll wear their sort of their jeans hanging down, you know, showing their boxer shorts. And white boys are emulating that. And
yeah,
I think,
still, huh? That hasn't worn off at this point.
No, and the style of music, I mean, you will get sort of some white use into like your guitar music, your white kind of music. But I would say certainly in the working class areas, which is, you know, the big cities where most people live, it's very horrible to see, but you see it again and again. They'll be, you know, they'll be doing this music, this like rapping kind of thing, what they call grime and stuff like that. And, you know, that's what they think's cool, like, you know, so that's the way it's going, unfortunately.
Yes. And so when did you get in? Did you start out with the BNP?
Oh, yeah. 2003, I went to my first meeting. I heard a guy from Warsaw, it's not far from Birmingham, called John Salvage speak. Very good talk. There's only about 25 people there, but it was still good to be in a room of all like-minded people. There was a distinct lack of young people, but straight away I signed up and started getting active. And was going out on leafleting sessions and stuff. At the time, in 2003, in Birmingham and around the country, the party was doing very well. I didn't know this at the time, but they'd had a massive boost from the north of the country in Burnley. There'd been sort of some race riots up there against the Pakistanis, and an old man had been beaten up in a park, and it was going around that the Asians were saying, you know, when I say Asians, just for your listeners, that means safe Asians, not Orientals. And the Asians, the Muslims were saying, you know, this is our park. You can't come here. And you always get the liberals saying, you know, that's not true. It's a myth. It's blown out of proportion. But I've experienced that myself from a very young, early age. But they got some councillors elected up there. And what happens is a kind of a ripple effect where if there's success in one part of the country, then that is good for the other parts of the country, because we didn't have any councillors. We've never got anyone elected in Birmingham. We did in 2005, but we got stolen out of it. I can discuss that later. But when I joined, basically, we was on pretty much a high. And every year, if anybody looks up the election results from sort of 2001, 2002, 2003, you'll see they're going up about 30% each time.
Wow.
So even though we have a first-past-the-post system, that means you have to beat all the parties, which is a tall order. It was happening. So I was very interested to get involved. It was only, then when about 2005 come, because I worked for the NHS then, the health service, and I got seconded to do my nurse training, to do learning disability nursing. I started falling behind from my work, so I had about between 12 and 18 months out. I was still watching the party closely. I remember one day I was with some colleagues at the university, and we was sort of walking up the high street at dinner time, and a British National Party van went past, you know, with the loudspeaker on the top, and I recognised the voice of the person who was saying it, you know, vote British National Party and all that, and the people I was with were sort of shaking their heads and all this, you know, and I thought, oh yeah, I'm sure I'll see them again. Another thing about that, when I first joined and we had talks from the union, Unison is the biggest union in Britain, I think, and what part of his
so
speech...
What union is that? What did you say?
Oh, sorry, it's called Unison.
Unison, okay.
Yeah, it's a very left-wing union. Oh. I mean, you would think that unions should be apolitical. I don't think they are anywhere. They certainly aren't over here.
So it's a labor union that's very left-wing.
In all but name, they give lots of money to the Labour Party. I mean, practically millions, literally millions a year. And part of his speech was sort of attacking the BNP. So, again, there I was sitting in the room thinking, I wonder how much I am the odd one out here. But then in 2005, because I had been a member, there was a new organiser. And the job of a new organiser is to follow up all the old leads and get the team built up again and get as many candidates as possible. And he knocked on my door in 2005. And I says, yeah, great, I'd love to come back and, you know, get involved. So I was involved from 2005 then up until April this year.
Yeah. Okay, April this year. And then and that was a long time. And you were pretty committed and devoted to it. You want to, at this point, well, let me just backtrack just for a second and ask you if you have any explanation for why you didn't fall for the mind washing, as you called it, I think you called it that, that all the kids got, all your fellow
students. Yeah,
and why they do. What do you have any reason? Can you explain it anyway why some do and some don't?
It's a very hard question. I've thought about it a lot. I think it is a lot to do with the kind of environment you were brought up in. Now, if all these parents are brainwashed a lot, there's a show called EastEnders, a soap, and you wouldn't believe how religiously people watch this soap. And there's all kinds of racial, you know, multicultural messages in there. Very, very subliminal, very, very, you know, slight, but it's there. Whereas my family didn't sort of try and mold me in any way. I've just left to find my own sort of beliefs. I mean, the first thing I noticed when I was quite young, I mean, 6, 7 maybe, I went to the city centre with my older brother and a friend of mine, and I saw 3 black youths holding up like this white kid, like taking money off him. And I could see the distress in his face. And I'm talking a busy Saturday afternoon. I'm talking hundreds and hundreds of people just walking straight past. And I think that had a profound effect on me. My brother says, I'd like to do something, but, you know, there's 3 of them kind of thing. And that really stuck in my mind. Whereas a lot later on, I remember I was in this park with, for the job I was doing, we'll take the patients out, you know, to get some fresh air. And we went to this park in a black area, and the guy I was with was very sort of, this is 2005-ish now, very kind of socialist, you know, he's very left wing. And we saw this black guy by the buzz we was getting back to, and he was really staring us out, you know. And it really had an effect on this guy I was with. I goes, what's wrong with you? He goes, why is that man staring at us? I goes, well, why do you think? I goes, we're white. He goes, Paul. He says, if you treat people that way, then that's how they'll act. I know. I goes, this is the first time you've noticed this. He goes, yeah. I goes, well, maybe in future you should look a bit more closely and see how things really go. So, I mean, he wasn't stupid, but he just never seemed to register to him at that time.
And didn't want to. They don't want to believe that. You know, they're trained, we're taught, like you were saying, all the environmental influences and so on. They're trained not to ever come up with that explanation.
Yeah.
So it can't be true, you know. Oh, because that makes you the kind of person that you don't want to be, you shouldn't be.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you just were able to think for yourself. You know, I had the same experience growing up, and I'm really grateful that I was never molded in any way by my parents. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think they didn't guide me enough. But, I think that's what I wanted, too, because I never wanted to listen to anybody. So,
yeah, because if you mold too much, then you might get the kind of April Gady, what's happened to her family.
Yeah, right. Exactly right. So we think that we can have a white nationalist marry, we can have a real good family life and bring up our children the right way. Often they just revolt against that once they reach a certain age or get their own freedom. So mm-hmm. Yeah, you just there's no way to force it to happen unless you have an entire country where everybody is thinking pretty much the same way and the kids are brought up in school and, you know, in the same kind of beliefs. And then it pretty much stays together. But the rest of the world won't let you have your country and do what you want to do. So, you know, the globalists won't allow that. So it's this perennial problem. But let's get back into something more positive. So now you went to work as what, an organizer?
First I was an activist, and I didn't even stand as a candidate at first, to be honest, because the NHS, who I work for, that's like part of the government, and that would have been a bit hairy. But I always made up for it by doing plenty of leafleting. Anyone would say from the period in Birmingham that, you know, Paul, he would always turn up, and I wouldn't even be waited to call. I would call them. Because in those times, 2005 to 2010, we all thought we was going to get an MP. Even the left thought that, because I used to rub their nose in it on YouTube and such, saying, you know, we're going to get... Oh, hold on, that's my alarm, I'm sorry. Yeah, people thought we was getting MPs, even the left thought that, so I would rub their nose in it.
You thought that the BNP or the right parties were going to become MPs. Is that what you're saying? Yeah,
that's right. So at that stage, there was no kind of shortage of organizers, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't really come up like, Paul, do you want to be an organizer? Because there was plenty of people to want to do it. When I became organizer was after 2010, when we was all very disappointed that we didn't get any and it all started to fall apart. You know, it was at that stage when there was no one else to do it that I volunteered to do it, really.
Well, so when you first joined, who was leading the BNP? And tell us about that, you know, history of it during that time.
You mean nationally or in my city?
No, nationally.
Since I've joined, it's always been Nick Griffin, because I think Nick Griffin took over from John Tyndall in 1999.
Okay.
So I'd certainly never heard of John Tyndall back then. I didn't even get to see Nick Griffin speak till about 2004, 2005. So he's been leader since 1999 up to the present day.
Well, we know that Nick Griffin has, of course, been very controversial. You know, I was looking at the British National Party website today. I looked at it yesterday, too, and before. But, you know, it's a very good website. He's still heading the BNP, and it's just tremendously controversial. We're going to talk about some of those things or ask you to. And but, you know, it looks like from the website, you know, there's good stuff on there. And, of course, they don't talk about Jews. And there's this one thing I listened to earlier was this the world at what is it? The world at large or whatever.
The world Lynn, at eight?
This Lynn woman. Yeah, at eight. That's right. The world at eight. That's it. And her program that was titled Gurkhas, Why Are We So Sentimental? Listening to that, I thought I should become more professional. You sound more like her. Of course, she's got that great voice and accent, but she doesn't. Again, you know, she says she reads the news kind of and puts a lot of news together, and it's a very informative program. But I thought, yeah, but she was not going to talk about Jews. She's not going to talk about Holocaust. She's not going to go into any of these things that I go into that are a lot more difficult. So that's why I'm not so professional.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem for me, Caroline. It's like they're telling half the truth.
Yeah.
Now, back in 1997, you can find a video on YouTube by Nick Griffin where there was this sort of hatchet job reporter who's dead now, Roger Cook, the Cook Report. If someone puts Cook Report 1997 BNP, they'll find it. And he asked him about the Holocaust, and a younger Nick Griffin did a brilliant job. He says, you know, oh, what are you talking about? Absolute rubbish. He says, there might have been 200,000 killed. You know, some who died in camps and mostly by partisans. He says, but this figure of 6 million in gas chambers is absolute garbage. Well, that's fine, but then if you watch Question Time, they ask him about it again, and he says, no, I don't believe in it anymore. And they
Yeah, but I also saw on a video that he followed, I don't know if it was now on Question Time, but he was on another program where they were really being nasty to him, and he said that if he couldn't say anything more because it was against the law, in not only a little bit in, I don't know if he said in Britain, but, you know, in Europe or whatever. And so, you know, that's all he was going to say. So he did add that, and that was fairly recent, I think. I don't know, maybe it was one or two years ago.
That sounds like Question Time, and the Home Secretary at the time was on the panel, Jack Straw, and he says, well, I'm the whole Home Secretary. He says, and I'll give you permission now to say what you think. And he just says, well, I do believe in the official story now. And then when they said, well, what's changed your mind? He says, I don't know what's changed my mind. Now the problem there is he's not just humiliating himself. He's humiliating the party and all the members, and certainly all the Jew Boys members. That's the way I see that, you see.
Yeah. Yes.
You
so
can't,
what?
You can't just these things are so big. I mean, you can't just subjects like that. They're so sort of central to our survival, really, that you can't just keep changing your mind on them every other year. You know, you've got to stick to the truth and tell the truth, I think, if you want people's lasting respect. I mean, you can get 7 years in jail in Britain for that kind of thing, but, you know, I mean, if you're going to be the leader of such a party which is supposed to save the country, and, well, you know, that comes with it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I saw something, I don't see it now here, but I saw something where Nick Griffin wrote a little editorial or something about the Nigel Farage, is that his name, of the UKIP, and saying, well, that party has changed its mind again about banning burqas. They now say they're not going to ban burqas. And before they had made this rule, they, you know, in their party that they were for banning burqas. Now they're not. And they said because they're libertarian. And, you know, Nick Griffin makes a big thing out of this, how they can change their mind whenever they feel like it. But I guess you're saying he's done it himself. So
yeah, I mean, to be fair, because I did make a few notes, I can read out some of the really good things he's done over the past 10 years.
Well, why don't we start with that? Let's because, you know, he has done some good things.
Sure. Okay. Firstly, He was the first political figure to highlight the Pakistani Muslim grooming gangs who get young girls, 11, 12, 13, drunk or stoned, then rape them and pimp them out to their friends. Now, 10 years ago, people might have thought, what? That can't be happening, you know? That's the racist BNP are saying this. But as you know now, there's so much proof, it's come out, there's so many of them in jail for it. He was right about that. And he did get, they did try and lock him up for that at one stage. He had to go to court for that. So that's a really good thing. Two, before we went too far with the modernising of the BNP, he did do the modernising good effect. However, by 2010, it went wrong. But he softened the image, I wouldn't say softened the image necessarily, but he brought it more up to date. You didn't have sort of white rights for whites everywhere. He made it more sophisticated. That's fair to say. That's a good achievement. Mm-hmm. Although I would say later on went far too far. Number three, 10 years ago, immigration was a taboo in Britain. It is the achievement of Nick Griffin's BNP that it is now a regular topic in the MSN and the mainstream parties. The mainstream parties have been forced to talk about it, which they have, and they do. So that's good. And you've also got the... There's this thing with the flag. Now, this is very different with America because, you know, growing up watching American TV and films and stuff, you always see the American flag everywhere, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, stars and stripes. Well, it was never like that here. You rarely see it, only at football matches and stuff. And there was stories, and they were true stories, in the 90s and early 2000s. You know, someone would put a Union Jack, or more specifically a St. George, which is the flag of England, connected to their house or on a pole in the garden. And the councils, most of them are run by Marxist Labour. They would send the police round and say, really, and say, that's offensive. You're whipping up racial tension. Take it down or you'll be nicked. There was stories with taxi drivers would have a little flag on their car, same thing. And that has changed. And I do think the BNP can take credit for that. He did say once, Nick Griffin, that we've took it out the gutter. And that's fair. So there's those things. There may be other things I haven't thought of, but that's all I could think of earlier, really.
Yeah, sometimes he takes that too far, but, you know, what are you going to do? He's trying to build up pride in Britain, but then he's the last couple of years, I recall him making a statement on Churchill, that Churchill should be seen as our great hero because he was our war hero. And there you get into the World War II stuff, and he has to be kind of politically correct there too, doesn't he?
I don't think so. I think you have to tell the truth. Otherwise, we're not going to get anywhere. I mean,
yeah, but I mean, he thinks he doesn't about that, does he? I mean, they don't want to get into that.
Well, that's right.
So he's standing up for Churchill and just like the Russians, you know, stand up for Stalin and now again, you know, because he's ours and so on. Well,
yeah, exactly. I remember going on John DeNugent's website because he was like an overseas member of the BNP, and he cut his membership card up over that.
Oh, the Churchill thing.
Yeah, he says, I respect Griffin and he's brave and he's been through a lot and all that, but why is he doing this? The BNP are at the height of their success, and right at that time, he kneels to the Jew, just like Churchill did. And since then, I'm afraid, it's been all downhill, so that didn't work, did it?
Well, good for John DeNugent. All right, so is that your list of the good things that he did?
Yes.
So
yes.
Why did you leave? And you stayed, and I read something from you recently, or maybe I heard it on your show or something, but you were saying that you stayed because you still wanted to be constructive toward a white Britain, and that was the best, only place to be. But finally, like you said here in April, you couldn't stick around any longer. So,
yeah, that's about right. I mean, I did leave. I've left twice this year. I think the first time was, if you remember, I sent that message in when you was interviewing Alex Linder, and he'd sent out that tweet someone must have called him a Nazi, or he likes Nazis or something. And then he replied, Jews welcome, Nazi cranks not wanted.
Yes, I have that written down here.
Now, that for me was like, I mean, come on.
When was that? That was this year.
It must be this year, yeah. I can't remember the month.
Okay. If 2013. No, that's a different date. I think this is it. 2013, January.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Jews. And that's what the exact quote from the tweet: to criticize Zionist warmongers is not to criticize Jews. BNP has and welcomes Jews. No. Yeah, Jews. I got that wrong. Nazi cranks not welcome. So he doesn't, you know, he doesn't say Nazis. No, he makes it a little bit so that you can't, you know, Nazi cranks. You know.
Like, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm a National Socialist, and I think that the hard workers in the party over the years who have mostly got things successful, not always, but mostly at a kind of a local level. There have been National Socialists, you know. They may not go around waving swastikas or Sieg Heiling, and no need to, but they certainly wouldn't come out with something like that. That must be a slap in the face. That's how I felt, like a slap
in
the face.
Well, it is, and it's the same as these other groups. There's some in the United States that want to have a wider appeal. They think it's important to reach more people by not excluding Jews, and they do want to exclude what he calls them, Nazi cranks, or they're called Hollywood Nazis and this kind of thing. Well, I don't like Hollywood Nazis either, but you don't have to make a big statement about it. Just don't make them welcome, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They do that to play to the public, to say, we're not Nazi, we're not Nazi, you know. And it never seems to work, though, does it, Paul? I mean, I never see that this gains these groups anyway.
No. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't work, because if you go back to 1997, when he made that statement about the Jews and the Holocaust, saying a load of rubbish, there's only 200,000 people died. Well, that didn't stop people getting elected in 2002. Mm-hmm. That didn't stop us getting 100 councillors. That didn't stop us getting two MEPs in 2009. Things only went wrong, as far as I can see, after Question Time, when he sort of flip-flopped, he appeared weak, and went back on such important issues. Since then, it's gone down, down, down. Anybody can look at the results. And it seems the lower the results are, the more they've been going softer and softer. It's only been the past month or so that people going onto the website, as you mentioned, will see it getting a little bit harder. No, and that to me is like, there's something fake there. You know, you're just kind of playing with people in a way.
Yeah.
You know, throw the hardcore. I heard you use the expression once, red meat. You know, and I'm fed up with little scraps of red meat. You know, I want the whole steak.
Okay. Well, there you go. So they're playing to the audience, see how it works. You know, it's like whatever works, that's what we'll say if it works better. And that's not the way to do it, because that doesn't show that you're functioning from principles. So, all right.
You want to hear a few of the bad points to level it out? Looking back in retrospect, he expelled the founder of the party, John Tyndall, twice in the early 2000s. That's something I've just been looking into lately, and it seems hard to justify that, but that was before my time anyway. He has expelled many capable people who ask questions about party finances. This has led to whole regions becoming stagnant with no capable organizer. And that's been going on a long time. People who have kind of gone against sort of Nick Griffin or asked questions, awkward questions, mm-hmm. have been booted out at the expense of the local activists and members. You know, that seems to be low on the list. If you've ever heard of a speaker called Jonathan Bowden, who died a year or two ago, he was one of those people who got booted out for asking questions, you see, mm-hmm. about finances. That was very ugly. So there's that.
No, I didn't know that Nick Griffin booted Jonathan Bowden out of
there. Yeah, he was our cultural officer, and everybody wanted him to speak at the meetings, you know?
Yeah.
Since number three, since 2009, when he got elected as an MEP, he has put none of that significant amount of money back into the party. Far from entering the big time as candidates and activists fought in 2009, Branches still had to pay £20 a month to their region, upwards. You pay upwards. Leaflets and stamps and all the basics were still paid for by the branch. By 2010, many people had to put their own £500 deposits to stand as general election candidates if their branch couldn't afford it. So basically, they was taking as much money as they could off people, donating. People didn't mind because they thought it was going to get people elected, but there was nothing was coming from this big leap we'd made in the EU, if you see what I mean. Because the MEP will be on 80k a year, and then he can have six staff who are on, I think, 30, 40 a year. Not exact on all figures, but that's pretty much right. And as I learned recently, when Andre Anglin was talking, saying that the Golden Dawn there, people are putting 80% back into the party. Mm-hmm. That has never happened with the BNP. That, I know that for a fact. So I don't think that helped either.
Yeah, and Griffin is a member of the European Parliament, right?
Yep.
He was elected, so he gets that big salary from that, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So,
it's not about begrudging or saying he shouldn't have it.
Right.
People was happy he did, but we all fought. I remember sitting in the pub after, we was all on a high mood. This is great. We're the big time now. And the old organiser then mentioned something. I goes, well, does that matter now? Isn't that small beer now? He's on about a small amount of money for something. But we never saw a penny. When I say we, I don't mean for ourselves. Mm-hmm. I mean for the branches themselves to get more professional, to get more good equipment, to get, you know, travel for people. It's always the same people. And most of our supporters are low income and middle at best, usually. And it just doesn't seem right to me. Another one is the membership fee was recently raised by 60% at a time when votes are an all-time low. Because if anybody wants to check, the votes that the BNP is getting now in 2013 are about the same as they was getting in 1990.
That sound like he's working, you know, in against the party growing and really being successful? Is that one suspicion that people might have?
Yes, there's all kinds of suspicions that, like some of Wales' former organiser said to me, you have to question the way that Nick Griffin has ran the party pool since 2010. But I wouldn't want to sort of speculate on any of the more sort of far out suspicions. I think possible, but I wouldn't really want to speculate.
Well, what about the far-out one that he's Jewish, he's got a Jewish background? That's been going around a lot. What is your opinion on that?
I don't believe that. His dad is a Freemason. That's a fact, so that's not speculation.
Okay.
So I know that makes people uneasy. This is a big one, Caroline. Number four. Instead of putting respected and capable nationalists on the payroll as EU assistants, Nick Griffin employed unproven and undeserving people who do not know about the 14 words and could not in any way be really described as racial nationalists. So what that means, you've had people such as Richard Edmonds, who's been with the party an awful long time, a founder member, real well-respected racial nationalist, and instead of offering people that job, He employed these people who have been in the party 5 minutes, but people never heard of them, you see. And that, over the past, since 2009, I feel, has had a real effect, a real demoralising effect. People are like, who is this guy? You know, where did he come from?
Well, wouldn't he be doing that in order to have people loyal to him only, who really didn't have the interest of the party or care that much about it, and whereas these experienced people have been there and they care about the party and the country in a way that he doesn't want any opposition to him. So we see that's like packing the board of directors. place, you know.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with the why he might do it, but I don't think that excuses it.
No, no, not at all. I mean, it shows that he's trying. He's not got the best interests of the party or the white British people in mind. He's got his own interests. He wants to stay the leader. And so he's getting these people in positions because they'll be loyal to him.
Yes, I'm afraid so. And one of the people is a national organizer. He refers to the Celtic Cross flag as a white power flag. Now, why an experienced nationalist would know, you don't use the enemy's terminology like that. Mm-hmm. So it's not a white power flag, it's a Celtic Cross flag. And it doesn't matter where you are in the world, Australia, New Zealand, America, Canada, Europe, that is our flag. Because a lot of the time now, these national flags, to me, are almost becoming like a symbol of our destruction in a way. And whereas that flag, there's nothing wrong with people being proud of the flag and stuff. I wasn't advocating replacing the flag, but what I did once at my branch meetings, this was recently when I come back, I wanted the Celtic Cross flag on the wall. And my idea of that was to communicate to my activist members in Birmingham, at least, that we are a racial branch, and we do sort of stand by the racial principles. And that was denied. I was told I was not allowed to do that. So I told the person above me, the regional organizer, well, you need a new organizer then, don't you? So yeah, that was that. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
It's pretty weak, isn't it?
Is that what drove you to quit the second time?
Yeah, that was kind of a final nail, really. I thought, because I went and I set up the meeting on my own, you know, my own time, blah blah blah. Nice meeting, good room, had our own beer garden, food, everything. Real nice meeting, and I told the person my superior, and the text back was fine, but you can't have that flag. Because I had been sort of raising it in a democratic way, you know. I'd been raising it, and I thought, well, okay, then suit yourself. Well, I kind of knew in the back of my mind we weren't going anywhere by this point anyway, but as you alluded to earlier, it's a case of, well, doing something is better than doing nothing, you know.
Yes, right. Well, that's right, and I give you a lot of credit for doing that. It's easy to quit something. You know, it's harder to stay with it and try to, you know, make it better. But so there comes a point, and I guess these were the points with you. And if you want to say any more about that, and what you think you can do now, or what you have, I know you've started some radio, which we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, well, there is a few more relevant points I'd like to raise.
All right, good.
Recently, probably 18 months or 2 years ago, excuse me, the party changed the logo, which was the BNP logo with the union colours, to a heart with the colours, and took the party towards the centre even further. The leader, Nick Griffin, also allowed Indians to attend London branch meetings. He had his photo took with one with his arm around her. He let London BNP campaign with the Indian. So you'll see this woman on website reports, and of course that gets around the internet and forums and stuff, and it's like, you know, look at the BNP these days. London has got some good people in it, but they've kind of got this feeling that because it's so multicultural in London now, well, they're going to have to do that. But my argument was, well, Birmingham's just as multicultural. I mean, we've gone
I'm looking at this heart. And so are you saying it used to be like a full flag, and now it's been...
It used to be the three letters BNP, and within those letters you would have the kind of Union Jack colours.
Okay, all right. And now they've changed it to a heart. Well, what do you think is... what is the meaning of that?
Well, Nick Griffin explained he kind of thought it was clever because the Conservative Party, a mainstream party, was thinking of using it. They decided not to use it, although they sometimes still do, but they make it look a tree with the Union Jack colours. So it's kind of sort of trying to make yourself mainstream just by changing a logo, but it's this heart, you see it everywhere. I mean, you see it in adverts, you see advertising, all kinds of things. The Olympics had kind of a heart, so it doesn't mean anything. And
it's
a real terrible mistake, really. Terrible mistake.
Okay.
I've heard people say, oh, I'm not wearing a heart badge, or I'm not pinning up a love heart, you know? People are embarrassed by the symbol of their own party name.
Well, and then they had this Indian. Now, I kind of missed some of that. He allowed an Indian to join, was it? And is this an Indian from India?
Yeah. So India from India, a safe Indian. I did miss say, it's probably further down my list. In the 2010 general election video, he had a Sikh. Maybe it's easy for explaining that way, a Sikh Indian in the election video saying, you know, vote BNP, and he's holding up his membership card. So you can't really blame London branch in that sense for then, apparently she's a nice woman, I'm not saying she isn't, but what does it say to the other people in the organisation when they go onto the computer and they see a non-white in their party being an activist? It's only a small step away from her being a candidate, and then there's no difference from UKIP, because UKIP have Asian and black candidates. So what's really...
Well, what it's saying is we're not bad neo-Nazis, we're not racist, we're not against non-white British people, and they're British people too. So we welcome these people. That's what it's an endorsement of multiculturalism.
Exactly, and that's like taking the soul away.
That's right. That's right. It's just taking it away. I mean, nobody, and you know, it's a rare person. It's rare for anybody who's trying to get people elected and so on to stick with their principles about the racial makeup of their organization. But as you have pointed out, and other people have also, it doesn't help them. And parties do better when they're more, I can't think of the word now, but you know.
Ideological.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
So so then you have to look for another reason. You know, maybe they're not doing it in order to get, they might be wanting to get more votes and get themselves, you know, into parliaments and so on, but that doesn't mean that they're fighting for what you think they're fighting for.
That's right. I mean, another big one for me, the leadership, shall I just say, the leadership was totally silent whilst Emma West was in jail for those 4 days. And I'm quite sure other people did, but I know I did for a fact, text the leadership, or Nick Griffin, and say, just release a statement, just release a tweet, because... Apparently, the excuse was that London BNP had been round to see Emma West's family and says, what can we do? We want to help. And Emma West's family says, well, we just want her home. We don't want any big commotion. We don't want protests. We just want to keep it quiet and get her home. Fair enough. I'm not saying that we should have had a big protest outside Downing Street, which we probably should have, but okay, you respect the family. But you can't tell me that one article on the website, because this is not just about race, although it was about race, but you know, it was unprecedented what they did to her. They locked her up, they took her son away for a while, and they wasn't going to let her out. It was only some pressure built up, and they did let her out. And total silence over that. Total silence. And that made me feel really a bit sick, because I thought, well, if, and Enzog points this out, that blogger Enzog, if the BNP are not going to speak out for Emma West, I mean, who is? You know, you would have thought of all the people who would have at least a tweet saying, you know, this is terrible what's happened to this woman. Where is the usual due process? You know, usual due process. You rant and rave on a train or whatever and call people names. Well, you might get arrested, but then you go home. You get bail. You go home, you get a solicitor, and then you get a court date. You don't just get locked up.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
Yeah.
and the silence, it just sent a shiver down me, really. I thought that was really poor.
Okay. So what else?
Let me see. Oh, yeah. Another one. The leadership discussed attending a demo to support the Golden Dawn. This was in January 2013, because the far-left communists over here had decided to do a protest outside the Greek embassy over the legal Democratic Party Golden Dawn. Mm-hmm. And an individual had organized a counter-demo. Good. So, I was sent a text saying, how about this? This is a good thing we should be doing, and it would be good, I think, to have Nick Griffin there, you know? It would be good for us. It would be a good morale for our members. It shows good solidarity. It shows we've still got backbone. We're still a racial party, X, Y, Z. I had a message back. I shouldn't say the details of private messages, but basically it was being thought of, okay? It was being considered. I thought, good, fingers crossed. Then I'll get a call then saying, no, we're not going to do that. They beat people up in the streets. Is that what you want? Do you want to go around beating people up? I says, no. I says, but don't you think the immigrants are doing crime over there?
So now these people in leadership of the BNP is saying that the Golden Dawn beat people up in the streets, and they don't want to be associated with it.
A little bit lower down the leadership, but it'd been fed down, and, you know, give that response to Paul. That's the answer.
Okay.
So, never happened. And then nowadays, you go on the website, Golden Dawn this, Golden Dawn that, doing a speech, it's bad, what's happened to Golden Dawn? It's like getting on the bandwagon late when it's easy to do so. It's kind of sinister, really, isn't it? Mm-hmm. When there wasn't so big news back then, I don't think. We should have been there. I should have been there personally. I didn't go there. I was told you can go, but, you know, you can't take anything sort of BNP. You can't show a BNP thing or whatever. I thought, well, what kind of a situation is that? The BNP organizer is going to go to a demo support Golden Dawn. And if you ask me where am I from, I can't say I'm BNP, or I can't hold up a BNP placard. So I never bothered going. But there was another one soon. I'll tell you the details of that later, and I shall be going to that as an independent nationalist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But you know, that's so much like in Germany, the NPD and other white nationalists who are not NPD but are, you know, are not known by their real names because it's so dangerous there, but are German nationalists, I should say, and white nationalists too. When this National Socialist Underground thing broke, and there's all this media hullabaloo about it, and they of course, you know, had discussion, and they decided, all of them, to not touch it. There's a friend of mine over there who thought it should have been. They should have stood up for somewhat, you know, spoken up for this Beta Chapa, who is now in under arrest and so on. And but his other comrades didn't think so, because they're afraid to be tarred and tarnished with anything like that, in case these, you know, because these people were considered murderers and so on, and they don't want to be seen that way. And of course they do, as a party like the NPD, they have to be very careful to keep their funding, you know, that they can't show any kind of, you know, criminal intent or whatever. So it just makes it, you know, but it's too bad that nobody did that. Of course, she came out with a statement from her lawyer at some point saying, or she told her lawyer, he said, that she didn't want a bunch of help from neo-Nazis or something like that.
a statement wouldn't hurt, I don't think.
If
it says, in this country, Germany, people are innocent until proven guilty, not the other way around.
Yeah.
And, you know, we support these people. I don't know that much about the case you're talking about, but I've saw bits on your website and here and there. We support these people, at least have a fair trial, whereas the media are calling them sort of guilty already, aren't they? That's
right,
the thing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but, I mean, it's the same problem that we have. Now, do you think that Nick Griffin feels that, and some of his, you know, people who are working with him, feel that they have got, they're the only choice for a British nationalist, and so they can keep, you know, they can misuse the money, they can try to, you know, get money from them that they, more than they should, and they do this and do that, and they're not going to go anywhere because they don't have any place to go.
Yes, well, they've repeatedly said as much. He's Nick Griffin's got this thing, he'll get a phrase and he'll keep using it. And he's got this phrase, we're the only game in town, we're the only game in town. So what you say is very, very much correct. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he's kind of right. I mean, the National Front have never got anybody elected. They've come close. And there's a new party that Andrew Brand started called the British Democratic Party. I've heard what you said about parties with the word democratic in it. At first, they did seem promising. They've had a couple of conferences, but I remember hearing that one of their leadership was apparently a secretary to David Irving. And I thought, well, that sounds interesting. And
okay,
then...
you got 60 seconds before the break.
And then when they had this second conference, he made a point of saying, I have never been a researcher or assistant of David Irving, and if he asked me, I would have said no. I thought, well, that's great, isn't it? Yeah. And so they seem fairly weak, really. They're not gonna tackle the big issues, the uncomfortable, the awkward, the dangerous issues. So
do you think then I don't want to keep talking right into the break music, but I will ask when we come back from the break if you think there's a future for the BNP, or if you think there's some other kind of better choices in for English people now. And when our break music, ladies and gentlemen, is the it's kind of new. It's Annette Mueller singing "The Unknown Soldier." Be back in 5 minutes.
Ändert an deine Qual, keiner kommt mehr hierher, niemand vermisst dich mehr. Oh, es tut weh, wenn ich deinen Stein so seh, treuer Soldat, mehr als dein namenloses Grab. Ich höre die Stimme, ich höre zum Gespräch, du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben und bezahlt mit unserem Leben, nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Mit dem Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Ich schwöre dir, so wahr ich hier stehe, ich trage die Fahne, wohin ich auch gehe. Nie werde ich euch verraten, für kein Geld der Welt. Ich kämpfe für dich. Ungebrochener Held, ich kämpfe für dich, unbekannter Held. Doch ich höre deine Stimme, ich gedacht zu mir sprich. Du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben und bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nimmt im Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Und wer dann auch lügt, euer Namen benutzt, eure Heldentaten durch Geld hier beschmutzt, den trifft das Schwert von unsichtbarer Hand. Ein Totenwächter von Wotan gesandt, ein Totenwächter. Schwarzen Gewand. Doch ich höre eine Stimme, die sanft zu mir spricht. Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben, bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Und es ist an der Zeit, übernimmt unseren Eid. Mit dem Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht. stehen für euch ein. Die Kraft, die wir brauchen, wird uns Wotan verleihen. Ihr gab so viel für dieses Land. Es war der Glaube, der euch verband. Es war der Glaube, der euch verband. Doch ich höre deine Stimme, ich darf zu dir sprechen. Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben, bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nehmt im Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Und kehre ich einst an deinem Stein zurück, berichte ich dir von unserem Glück. Dann ist es geschafft und wir sind wieder frei. Dein Grab blüht wieder, darum ging's mir dabei. Dein Grab blüht wieder, denn jetzt sind wir frei. Doch ich höre deine Stimme, sanft zu mir sprich. Du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben und bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nehmt im Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Ich höre eine Stimme, die sanft zu mir spricht. Du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben, bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Und ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Halt. Wir sind Geiste, die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager on Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn, and I'm having a really good show today with my guest, Paul Hickman, from the United Kingdom, and specifically from Birmingham, England. And Paul, I think that this went by, so we've barely scratched the surface here, I might say. And I don't want to miss out on anything. We might get some callers during this hour, and I do encourage callers to be brief and to direct a question to Paul and not to just talk in general about general things. So if you do call, you're welcome to call. Now, do you have anything more to say about leaving the BNP? Because this was kind of a big decision for you. And then, as you know, I want you to talk a little bit about what you plan to do from here.
It is a big decision, and it's not an easy decision. Because when I went back the second time, in a way I was glad, because there was two incidents in a very short amount of time. I think it was February 2013, but don't quote me, I'm not sure exactly, but, you know, more or less. First, you had a young white kid called Aaron Dugmore, and he hung himself. I don't know how a six-year-old hangs himself, but he did. And the reason was racial bullying from Asian kids. Again, Asian means South Asians, Pakistani, Bangladeshi. And it come out that the parents had spoke to the head teacher, principal of the school, and says, won't you do something about this? Aaron is being bullied by these kids. And the teacher reportedly said, you wasn't forced to come here, or it was your choice to come here. That really affected me. And then I think it was 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, a young girl, you probably heard of this one, Christina Edkins, was travelling on the bus through Birmingham, going to a school. She's 15 years old, and there was a black man sitting on the bus, and I don't know what went on. There's no way of knowing exactly, but he pulled out a knife and stabbed her in the chest, and she died on the bus right there and then. And then I thought, well, you know, my God, it's a good job I'm back because you've got to do something and blah, blah. But even with things like that, you know, it comes to a point where you're just really wasting your time. That's all I've got to say about leaving the BNP. I mean, currently what's going on at the moment is the leadership ignore the fact that Front National leader Marine Le Pen has distanced herself from the BNP publicly. There's articles she said she doesn't agree with the BNP. She's more like UKIP. Even so, the BNP leadership, I know they know about it because I've sent them a message about it. They bleat on about the Front National's recent success. So that again shows a lot of weakness to me, that another party sort of gives you the cold shoulder. They don't want nothing to do with you, and you keep going on about their success. Furthermore, Bruno Gollic, I think that's how you pronounce his name, a deputy leader of the Front National, he has 3 Japanese children. And he was recently invited over for a speaking session, and he's done a few speeches for the BNP, which I wasn't at, obviously, around Britain. So it just goes on and on, you know.
Yeah, very, very compromising. I mean, just everybody wants to compromise, don't they?
Well, you think whatever's next, you know?
Yes, right. Well, you know, like, but Marine Le Pen, everybody's, you know, happy because she's doing so well. But I think, as you do, that, you know, the party doesn't stand for much. However, you know, if you want to look at the real situation, immigration, third world immigrant, non-white immigration is our worst problem. If, you know, that without getting rid of that, we don't have any hope to do anything. And so if these parties kind of focus down on that, but by the way they're doing it, you can't do anything about immigration if you ignore the Jewish power and you ignore, what these races are doing who are already here and legal and so on. Just, I mean, there's so many other things you have to deal with in the historical inaccuracies and so on. You can't just do this one thing because they don't seem to be getting too far with it.
No,
you know, like if Marine Le Pen's party would win in, let's say Marine Le Pen becomes, what would she would become, the prime minister or something?
President.
What would she actually do? President, okay, yeah. What would she actually do then?
Well, that's it. I mean, with the messages she's sending out, I mean, it would seem like you're getting more of the same, really. I mean, I know they're standing an Algerian candidate. I saw his picture, and very obviously non-white. He's not like one of these odd cases. You know, you might get the odd Turk or the North African who's very sort of European, got a lot of European blood and all that, you know. You think, well, okay. No, he looks like an Arab. And so what's the point? I just don't see the point anymore. And I think they'll get this kind of short-term boost, whereas people who might not have voted for them, but in the long term,
Think it's a way to attract people who would otherwise be more extremist and maybe do something. I also think that a lot of things, forums and things are ways to, that they're tolerated because they're ways that people, pro-white people and so on can vent and can feel better after writing stuff on there and, you know, and they never reach that boiling point where they're going to actually go out and do something. Of course, we don't want people to just go out and start murdering, you know, strangers. But you know what I mean? I think there's a big part of what is tolerated is so that people will, and it, like Alex Jones is supposed to be a place that, you know, but where, you know, a whole lot of people can vent their feelings and can feel like they're doing something or something's being done or they're, you know, expressing their displeasure without anything ever coming from it.
Yeah, that seems possible. I don't think the Jews and the elites like what we're doing on the internet. Certainly the stuff people like you are putting out and others, they don't like that at all. But they may be just letting us vent a little bit so people get their frustrations out, sure.
Yeah. Well, do you want to now go on to, before we talk about radio, can we kind of cover a little bit that you like, you like the 14 words and you like the Bugs mantra. Anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. So, you know, you're not in any way, you don't in any way approve of compromising with multiculturalism at all. Uh-huh.
Yes, I very much believe in the 14 words, and because you've got David Lane there who's passed on, and he paid the big price. But look, he does live on, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. We're talking about him now. I've never heard one person disrespect him in the quote-unquote movement. So in that way, he's won, you know, in his own little way. The mantra thing is something I've been aware of for about 2 years. And it is clever because it's saying things without saying it, but it's not compromising either. So you're not going around saying nigger this, packy that, or Jew. But with those words, anti-racist is a code word for anti-white, it makes people think. And that's why people such as like Jimmy Maher and others who have put the banners up, it has made world news. I mean, that banner he put up, that was in probably the most popular paper in Britain, the Daily Mail. So, I mean, that's got to be getting somewhere. And if people sort of Google it, they'll come across all kinds of things. So, I mean, I am getting a banner currently printed, which is like 12 foot long with the mantra on, and going to try and make some use of it.
Well, good. So you said that you had some things to say about being an independent nationalist.
Yeah, well, it's kind of hard because when you're in sort of a party, you've always got things to do. You've always got elections coming around. You can follow up your members and so forth. And then when you're independent, well, what do you do then exactly? Well, that's why I like the mantra, because that's one thing you can do and make an impact. There's also a group I've come across recently called National Action. Their website's national-action.info, and they're a new group in the UK set up to mainly recruit younger people. See, I've always been the youngster, really, because there's not many older, younger people in the political parties, far-right parties, but now I'm in my 30s, these are late teens, early 20s, I don't mind if I've got some experience and stuff, then I can contribute to it. They've got a very talented web designer, and they've printed some really impressive leaflets, which are for recruitment. And the leaflets are about usury and debt slavery and who is responsible for that. And they've got the picture of the sort of character of the Jew rubbing his hands. So there's no punches are held back. And immigration is on there as well. And who are bringing in the immigrants? So they are currently getting a banner printed also, and one of the things which we intend to do is somebody, the name is Eddie Stanton, he's not a person I know personally, but he's started, he did the Golden Dawn demonstration earlier in the year, and he's set up another one, and it's entitled We Support Political Prisoner Nicholas Mihalokios, Solidarity with Our Greek Comrades in the Global Struggle Against the Jewish New World Order. So National Action are going to go there. They've spoken to the people who are organising it. They says, yep, sure, you can hand out a few leaflets. You can use your banner. That is taking place Saturday 9th of November at the Greek Embassy, 1A Holland Park, London.
What November?
Sorry, Saturday the 9th.
9th, okay.
Yep. And that's at the Greek Embassy in London, postcode W11-3TP, at 1 p.m. So I plan to accompany them there. And see, last time Golden Dawn did put it on their website, the main website, support from our British comrades. So that wasn't a waste of time, was it? It's only one day, you know, you go down to London, and the Celtic Cross flag was there, and the Greek flag was there, and there was no BNP there because I explained why. So that's something. And these young guys in the National Action are all raring to go. And the next day, there's another event. I haven't been to this before, but it's the National Front Remembrance Day Parade in London. And it's quite special because it's been going for 40 years, approximately. And every Remembrance Day, the National Front, and this is agreed, they've got it kind of like guaranteed to do it every year. Because unlike the Notting Hill Carnival with the Blacks, where there's multiple stabbings and drug dealing arrests, there's never any arrests there. And that is the next day, Sunday the 10th of November, and National Action and myself, hopefully, shall be going to that as well. Although that is more of an event to honour the war dead. So might not be much leafleting going on, but you can still meet people, talk to people, swap phone numbers. So that's sort of what I've got planned over the next few weeks. And I don't know what else will happen after that.
Well, what is the distance from Birmingham to London?
About 130 miles.
All right. Well, that's a good drive for you. That you're really very, very, very active, Paul. People, you deserve a lot of credit for that. Well, you know what else is going on is your radio work, and I've been listening to your Radio Albion podcast for a while now, since I first saw one, and I just can't wait, I can't hold off anymore, and I've probably held off too long already, telling the listeners that you are joining the White Network, and you will be doing your program, weekly 1 hour program, on every Sunday at 2 p.m., and it's called Voice of Albion, right?
Yep, that's right. I'm honored to come on board, and I hope it adds something. I was going to first sort of summarize the life of John Tyndall, the National Front and British National leader and founder of the BNP, and play some audio in between and put things into context, sort of, because in the past I've had trouble thinking, well, what happened when, and it's hard to tie all things in, but I find it interesting to tie things in and get a clear timeline and stuff like that. But I've also, there's quite a few people who've agreed to come on and sort of interview, but we'll have to talk whether another time about doing it live. I'm not really that concerned, and when I've tried to do live shows, I mean, personally, I've had all kinds of technical problems. So I'm certainly happy to do podcasts for the time being.
Right. And if for a 1 hour show, it's almost good enough, because often you want to do things live so that other people can call in and participate. And there's not enough time if they do that to always do what you planned with your guests. So anyway, it's all up to you. You're a free agent in doing your program. Now that you've gotten, you know, we've got everything all set up and so on. But just want to remind people now that Voice of Albion with Paul Hickman will be on Sundays at 2 p.m. And your first show is tomorrow, starting tomorrow. So,
yep.
So we have the Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn program on Saturday and then Paul Hickman's program on Sunday. And we're real happy about that.
I think it will be like 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, British time.
Okay, yeah, you're going to have to get that all figured out, you know, because we're on daylight savings time now, and we're going off daylight savings time in, I think it's November 3rd. So that can be very confusing when it comes to, international times, you know, comparing international times. It doesn't make any difference here in the United States because our clocks change and everything, but you'll just have to be real aware of when 2 o'clock Eastern U.S. time is.
That's
so you
right.
Show up for the show.
I've got a feeling that most people do listen sort of later anyway.
Oh yeah, by far.
So I remember checking on Podmatic what I uploaded my podcast to. It was about 3 weeks ago, and I was very surprised to see some of them had over 2,000 hits. You know, 2,000 or 3,000 listens. Mm-hmm. I thought, wow, I didn't expect that at all. So people do enjoy, as I do, sort of, you know, relaxing and putting a podcast on. It saves watching the crap on TV, doesn't it?
Yeah, and people like to listen while they're working, doing things. That's what I've done for a long time. So, yes, it is. Although we have a good number of listeners today, let's see as we get a few more things we get through a few more topics here, then I'll once again invite people to call if anybody wants to call in. So what else do I have here? I've just got some articles that have come out, and one is about, if you want to talk a little bit about John Tyndall, one is that it was in the Telegraph. It's just a real hit piece, and it was from, 2012 in August by Ed West, The Strange Death of BNP England. And in it, they talk about, he insults John Tyndall as being a neo-Nazi who likes to dress up in brown uniforms or something, and that he didn't do any good for the NPD, and Griffin kicked him out and so on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know all the ins and outs of what happened then because I wasn't around, but as I said, what people should do if they want to see and read John Tyndall's point of view, and he does seem like a very honest man. I mean, I never met him, but just reading his words and listening to his speeches, mm-hmm. he certainly doesn't go for this watering down the message. That's a fact. I do know he was expelled twice after sort of stepping aside sort of honourably for a younger man, i.e. Nick Griffin, who did have the gift of oratory. So he did that, and as I can fathom, his thank you for that was being expelled twice. I mean, how can you do that? I mean, it's like, I don't know, I take over the White Network and then I expel you. I mean, don't get it, right. Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose that's how it is. It's the power struggles and stuff like that. I don't know how he died. I just presume it was a natural death, a quiet death.
Mm-hmm. Well, you are going to have your program about him tomorrow, but, I would like to read that book. He sounds like he was a principled man, and that's what we're looking for.
Definitely.
You know, here's something that's interesting, because speaking about Britain, and I think that, what is your opinion on the Jewish problem or the Jewish power in Britain as compared to Jewish power in the United States?
I think in many ways it's hard for people to imagine now, but America is kind of still a colony of Britain, only in the respect that the people who run Britain are now running America too, i.e. mm-hmm. the Rothschilds, you know, with the amount of money and power they've got. We don't know who runs the Federal Reserve, but we don't know who runs the Bank of England either. But we do know. We know it's the Rothschilds at the top who run it, and then they've got this kind of money scam where they're keeping people in debt and getting interest off money that doesn't exist, kind of thing. So I'd say in that respect, we've got very much the same problem.
I think there are a lot of Jews in Britain who don't have Jewish names. And of course, there's Jews all over who don't have Jewish names, and they're in the they're in the U.S. too. But they're very prominent in Britain. Like this is. I came across something about this Sir Martin Sorrell, who is the CEO of WPP, the largest marketing or branding type company in the world, or one of the largest, depending on where you're reading. Have you ever heard of him?
The name rings a bell. I don't really know about him. I know you've got Lord Sainsbury, for example, who is a Jew, and that's not obviously a Jewish name, is it? And their supermarkets open up everywhere. They're like mushrooms, you know? So,
you're right. And that would be another one. But this guy, I just happened to start searching around about him. And he admitted in an interview, he's pretty open, pretty open in his talk. In an interview that, I read on the, Wikipedia that, his grandparents had come over from Russia. Poland, they were Russian, Polish, and Romanian Jews. Well, it turned out later I found out that his father was a Russian Jew. His mother's family was the Polish and Romanian Jews. And then, you know, his father was born in the UK, probably in somewhere in England, and he did well. And then they sent Martin to this very fancy school, or, you know, a high-class school let's see, he was born in London to this Jewish family, and then he was educated at the independent haberdashers Ascus Boys School, and then went to Christ College, Cambridge, and then got an MBA from Harvard. And you wonder, you know, I'm always thinking, gee, these poor Russian and Polish and Romanian Jews come over. And then next thing you know, they've got a son or a grandson who's been knighted by the Queen, you know, and they've gone to all these expensive schools. But go ahead.
England's, for a long time, hundreds of years, has been kind of a safe place for Jews, hasn't it? I mean, when Marx was kicked out of Germany for subversion by Bismarck, he went to France and they locked him up in France and they kicked him out of France. So where did he end up? England, and that's where he's buried, and you've got his big grave there with his head on. The leader of the Labour Party at the moment in opposition, Miliband, he's a Jew, and it's recently come out about his either his father or his grandfather who came over from Russia as well, and he's had some very anti-British views, you know. And people say, well, you shouldn't judge the son on the father's views, but if his father's a far-left anti-British intellectual, I'm sure he's implanted some, shall we say, principles, can't think of a better word, into Miliband, and he could well be the next Prime Minister, very largely, actually, in 2015. So that's what we've got. I mean, before you had Michael Howard, and he was a Jew, again, from Romania, his family, the old Holocaust story, you know, blah, 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 what a shame. And you do wonder how they get to the top all the time. But I think you'll have to go back to who really rules Britain. I don't know if you know the story of the Rothschilds, how they got so powerful in Britain.
I know that story about during Napoleon's battles in Russia,
in the Waterloo.
And he made a huge amount of money, and that's when they became the richest bank in the nation.
That's right. And so they've got their sort of square mile or square 2 mile in London, and they own it. And also the Rothschilds, they pretty much own in Israel, don't they? They've got streets named after them and all this kind of stuff. So I can only think that it can't be by merit that so many Jews have got to the top in Britain. It just can't be. It has to be their sort of promoting their own. I mean, the person I spoke about at the start, Margaret Hodge, actual name Oppenheimer, well, they made their money in South African gold mines and diamond mines, the Oppenheimers. And that's why we was took into the Boer War for. 40,000 British died there. What did they die for? They basically was dying for those gold mines and diamond mines. And we put the Boers in concentration camps for that. And they reckon about 27,000, mostly women and children, died. So what was all that for? It wasn't a patriotic war. I don't think there has been since that Waterloo. Don Janudin has a lot of good stuff about this. I don't think there has been. I think they've been pretty much calling the shots since then. And that is trying not to be sort of conspiracy theorist, so I don't like to be, but you know, you just keep looking at the evidence and you look deeper and deeper and it's all there, you know.
Right. Well, right. And you know, when speaking of all the white British who die for these Jewish, you know, incited wars and so on and operations that they want to do, and the British elite go along with them, well, that brings up the royal family too. I'm going to have to ask you about that. So, well, that ties in with this. So, you know, what do you think that is just that the obviously true British people, of which you have to be an example, are expendable and are not even held in any kind of respect or regard whatsoever in Britain, which is just trying to. I've never seen them. I don't know a place that is more filled with like you say, call these South Asians and now blacks and all kinds of people. Just whole neighborhoods filled with them, as in London, say, in some of the cities there. And so you have that, and then you have the royal family, what is your opinion? You think you think that Britain should get rid of its royal family? then there's the thing now that they're Jews, and there's a lot of sites that talk about what Kate Catherine, Kate.
Kate Middleton might be a
Jewish. Yeah, Kate Middleton's Jewish, and the little George, baby George, is Jewish for that reason.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
They had that baby George in a Jewish hospital in London, and you know, there's pictures of Prince Charles wearing his yarmulke. And as you say, I mean, I call the Queen a pro-white genocide queen, because that's what she is. I mean, that's what she's doing.
A lot of people think, well, she has no power, so she can't say anything about it. Well, she doesn't have to go along with it, though. I mean, none of them do. It's just ridiculous.
Well, yeah, because you've got the Queen's Army. It is the Queen's Army. You can't buy or sell anything, really, without having the Queen's picture on it. Not picture, but, you know, the royal crest. The courts have all got the royal crest, to say, at Her Majesty's pleasure. She owns all the prisons. So to say she's got no power, I don't believe that. Some people have said she's misguided. She signed off the immigration bill. She has to sign off the bill. They go to her desk and she signs them off, and then they become, I don't know all the legal terms, I think it's statute. A bill actually becomes a law. And the one was bad for us was the race laws, obviously. I think it was 1968, which basically meant that immigrants, non-whites, are pretty much untouchable. If you say anything about them, the law's going to come down on you. So that's what the Race Relations Act, that was it. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And then there's the EU, how she signed us away to the EU. So, I think really that they do have to go.
You have to ask, who are these people anyway?
Mm. And then there's the other thing, like you had that stuff about Jimmy Savile and stuff. And the BBC is like the Queen's propaganda channel. They covered up the Savile stuff. There's no way that people didn't know what he'd been doing. Mm-hmm. Man and woman on the street didn't know, but it's just so obvious now at the top that they did know. Mm-hmm. And why was he knighted? Why is the pictures of him with Prince Charles, all the top MPs and ministers? It's just all staring you in the face, you know. There's another guy.
Go ahead.
There's an Australian guy you might have heard of called Rolf Harris. You know him? He's like an artist, and he's a bit of a funny character, but he has been the Queen's royal portrait person. He has several pictures of the Queen. When I was doing deliveries in Manchester the other year, I remember seeing loads of pictures of his and going for good money and all that stuff. Well, now he's up in court soon for the same kind of thing. And not just one charge, but a whole load of charges, underage girls and all this. So it's just, it keeps coming back, doesn't it? It keeps coming back to them, and you really do have to wonder what they get up to, what they do for kicks, shall we say.
It's sickening. And it's so sickening that the average people won't believe it, don't want to believe it, and it's, you know, feel it must be lies or something. And then what's also sickening in a way, a different way, is the way people, and the British people, but any people would be doing it if they had their own long-standing royal family. I mean, the Dutch have theirs and so on. They just feed off, live off this stuff from their royal family and get so much pleasure out of it and follow it all. And you can just manipulate these people, you know, the average British person, like crazy, because with all these stories and pictures of babies and marriages, good-looking young brides and so on.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, here in the United States, we just have celebrities. So you're just looking at these silly, stupid celebrity good-looking, you know, young people that they plaster all over the place. But it does the same thing. You know, people just are hung up on it. It's too bad. I don't know. I mean, why was so damn dumb? I get so sick of it.
I know. How can it be that a country that won two world wars, had an empire until recently, still has some possessions which bring in money, islands and stuff like that? And I've heard the Queen has got £17 trillion altogether. I know Prince Charles owns most of Cornwall, which is a very nice 99% or 98%, something like that, white, beautiful part of the country. He owns most of it. how can a country like that have 300 food banks, and I reckon there's 3, 4, 5 food banks opening every week? Can you imagine, like, the people who fought that war, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, looking at 2013, seeing the place full of immigrants? Maybe he'd have a look at the paper and see, as I did recently, that white kids now, forget about 50%, they're down to a third in Birmingham schools, down to a third, 31.4%, they said. Imagine him, one of them people, looking at that, and then looking at food banks and all this kind of stuff. I'm quite sure that they didn't die for that.
Well, do you think that, you know, I know you're doing the best you can. You know, why is it so hard to wake people up, ordinary people, into caring about their own interests instead of being, you know, mesmerized by movies and by pictures of royal families and stories like that?
I just think you've had such, you had, in the start of the 20th century, you had these, what was it, one of Freud's family and Bernays.
Oh, yeah.
And, how they
Edward Bernays.
You see how they trick women into smoking, because before then, women didn't smoke. It was just a manly thing. And they kind of sexualized it. They made it kind of fashionable. Mm-hmm. And they did all these kind of things. The next thing you know, loads of women were smoking. It's just how the human mind works. And I think they've got it down to such a T. They've got it down to such a perfection. They've been doing it for so long. They just keep doing it. I think the only way people will wake up and are waking up is, number one, the internet. I mean, I've had a few people who would not usually, you would not describe as white nationalists, that have sent me videos of Hitler giving speeches. And there's some speeches he's done where he's not ranting and raving. He's speaking very, very measured. And he's talking about Britain and Churchill and how many times he sent out peace feelers. And then he's talking about Roosevelt in another one, how he's wanted war with Germany on behalf of the Jews since he got elected. And there's nothing they can do. They want war, war, war. So I think if people like that are sending me videos like that, then they must be sending it to other people. So that's one thing. And the only other thing is the drastic drop in living standards, which everybody is now facing. And it was okay in the 2000s, because what they did, the Labour, they eased all these credit laws. So everybody had credit cards. I remember I had 5. And I didn't have particularly good credit. And,
you bad boy.
And people could get a mortgage like 110%. So you could get a house and you could get 10% on top, you know, just like that. But all that's gone now. All the easy credit's gone. Very hard for people to get on the property ladder. And in that way, I mean, you know, people have never saw food banks. You haven't had food banks in Britain since the 50s, since after the war. So I do think we're going into kind of a new chapter now. And that's the only thing I can see that's going to do it. Those things combined, the internet and the loss of living standards. So bearing that in mind, going back to what I was talking before, it's the worst ever time you want to go soft is now. Because I think now we've got a little chance to say the truth, everything, the Holocaust, World War II, the royal family, everything, just lay it all down. And those that are too stupid or stubborn to follow, well, if they're not going to follow, they're never going to follow. And sort of most movements or revolutions and stuff, it usually has been only about 5% of the population, if that, you know.
Well, that's all very good, what you say. And I think it's about all we've got to go on. And I think for that reason, anybody who is aware of what's going on should realize that everything that they do is very important, and they should do as much as they can do. But if they're just talking stupidly, they should just be quiet, because it doesn't help. Well, going back to this this Martin Sorrell, just because it's kind of instructive, and I was wanting to say a few things about it. So he's given this education, and then he's got this drive. And, you know, you have to admit that Jews have this drive, and they instill it in their kids that they have to succeed or they're all going to be, you know, done in or something, because they do have that sense that they're a small little group and they have to do everything they can to look after one another and to work in behalf of all of them and so on, and to get ahead and make a lot of money. Of course, it's instinctive in them to make money, but you know, I think that they do work at it. They don't want to work at labor, and a lot of them are pretty lazy, like rabbis and stuff. But somebody oh, sure. like him, you know, he was probably, you know, told now get you know, make do something. And well, he bought this WPP thing, which is where did that go? Wire and plastic products. Totally a shopping basket manufacturer. He invested in that. And in a short time, he took it over, became chief executive, and then he turned it into an advertising company. And now it's this great big global advertising. Well, we know that Jews have a lot of help from the Jewish network. So, you know, you can't say that it's easy for anybody to do that. It's easier for Jews to do it. And he married he was married to Sandra Feinstone. So she was Jewish also for quite a number of years and had three children. And then they divorced, and she got a whole bunch of money from him. And he still had enough left. Now he's married to someone named Christiana Falcone, an Italian who's involved with the World Economic Forum. You know, same old globalist stuff. And his name is Sorrell. Now here's a story that was interesting. He wouldn't tell in this interview. He did an interview after he won a big reward. And he wouldn't tell what his family name was, you know, the Jewish name. He said, that's a deep, dark secret. And he admitted his paternal grandparents came from Russia and his mother's grandparents from Poland, Romania. He says, my father's name was not Sorrell, as there was a very significant degree of anti-Semitism in the UK in the early 20th century. The family name was changed, and he took the name from the book that he saw in a store window. And there is a picture of this book, Sorrell and Son. And it was made into a masterpiece theater presentation. And he just picked out this name, you know, according to this story. And that became their name. And, you know, I almost think there should be something. People should not be allowed to do that. If they're covering up their real identity, in a sense. But a lot of these Jews do. And, because his company is so big, you know, he got knighted, and his knighting was said that his for services to the communications industry. So, you know, if you make money if you're British and you make money, you know, and keep Britain doing well commercially and so on, that's why you get these honors.
Do you know what his name was before, or is that
no? You see, he says that's a deep dark secret, and. And nobody ever asked him for it. Nobody will ask him for it. You know that.
Maybe because it could be traced back to sort of communist commissars and.
Well, sure. You know, I mean, I imagine it could be traced, but I don't. I'm not going to do it. I wish somebody would look them up, see if they could trace the real family name. But you know, these Russian and Polish Jews, and probably part Romanian too, they're the worst ones of all, and we're filled with them. Mm-hmm. You know, in Britain and in the United States, just so many of them. Ugh.
It's very hard to explain to people, isn't it? Because they look like us. You know, we've got an enemy that looks like us. And...
Yeah, this man, he looks kind of Polish. He's kind of, they say he's sort of pint sized, but he's just a little bit on the husky side. But he's got a kind of a pug nose. He doesn't look Jewish at all. But I would say, if I was to guess, you know, knowing his background, I would say he looks more Polish, but he could look Russian too, you know. I mean, that's that kind of a look, you know.
Yeah, that's the difficulty, I think. Mm-hmm. So what about, I notice in America on the 1st of November, you know, the EBT cards, these welfare things, which millions of blacks are on, some whites as well, but mostly blacks are on these EBT welfare cards, and they're going to be cut on the 1st of November. Have you heard anything about that? Because there could
no.
be riots.
Is that a done deal, that they're actually going to cut them off in just a few days?
So I've been reading, I think they're going to take $36 off it, but it's only about $240. So, you know, they're going to feel that. I know recently, I think it was a test, because the EBT system went down for a couple of hours, and two Walmart says, it's okay, we'll let you shop and we'll sort out your balance later. So what they did, loads of them turned up. It went around the social networks, and they was putting sort of $700 worth of food in their baskets and all this stuff in the trolleys. And then when it come on the announcer that says, you know, the EBT system is now working, and loads of them left their trolleys and ran off because they know they only had a few dollars on there. One at the counter, it had like 49 cents on. And, you know, it was like $400 to $600 dollars a grocery. So I think that will be interesting.
Well, what, you know, I haven't paid too much attention to that. Is that food stamps, EBT cards?
Yeah, it's food stamps, but they've kind of made it electronic. So you get credit card.
Yeah, and, right. And they get, and it was not, but isn't it different for everybody? Or is not, it's not one set amount? You said something about 400 and some dollars.
Yeah, I suppose it matters how many kids you've got and stuff, but the figure I saw was a standard one for a small family was like $240, I think, and they're chopping off $36.
Oh, $240.
It's not a lot, really, but you know.
But did this have anything to do with the government shutdown, or with I wouldn't think so, or with the idea that we have this debt ceiling, and we had, so in order to get the debt ceiling raised, they had to agree to cut some welfare, some benefits or something?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like that. It's pretty much what they've done in Greece and other places, you know.
Yeah.
The people right at the bottom, they're cutting their money further and further. And meanwhile, all the prices are going up. So you have to think, well, there's got to be a point where it snaps. But in America, you haven't really got a group to take advantage of it. Although I know you've got the Freedom Party, which was called the Third Position before. And there does seem some good people on there. You've got Kevin MacDonald, Sunak, Virginia Abernathy. But
Kevin MacDonald always kind of points out that he doesn't run it. He doesn't want to be, and now they've changed their name. Oh no, they haven't. They're now the Freedom Party. You're right.
Yeah,
and,
they did change.
Kevin MacDonald is on the board. I think from talking to him, I think he kind of agreed to do it. You know, because he thought that it was important. They're doing a good. You know, he thinks there should be a party, but the people who are really running the party, and I don't know if Merlin is still head of that party, They're so mild.
That's the disappointing thing.
They're even more mild than the mild parties in Europe.
Yeah. I looked at their website, and it is disappointing because you hear these names in it, and you'll think, well, look how much they know. That they know all the truth. And it's like conservative, isn't it? Paleo-conservative type
thing. Well, it's hard in the U.S. because it's such a big country, and it's so many different regions, and then there's all these other, you know, non-white people here. And it's very hard to get really organized something, I think. Even in Britain, with all the problems you have, at least there's something called the British people. And American people don't think of themselves in the same way that national groups think of themselves in Europe. So
it's a shame, though, there isn't, a strong party that people could vote for, even if it was only in certain states. I mean, isn't Alabama like 90% white or something?
Well, there's a ton of blacks in those states, but there's really stronger white people who feel white, you know, because of all the blacks and so on. But we know Andrew, speaking of Andrew Agglin, he was just recently finally came out with saying that he believes in national groups staying national and not so much for this pan-nationalist idea or pan-European, pan-white idea, really. And because you can really organize one identity nationalist group better. And he was talking about America being, could be seen, Americans could be seen as a kind of a national identity of our own because we, even though most Americans are mixed European heritage, we could come up with some kind of American identity. I think he's right about that, but actually doing it, at least he's talking about it, but actually doing it is quite a job.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, the European people are still mixed as well, like with other Europeans, you know? If you look at Britain, we've had the Danish invasions. They owned a large part of England for a while, King Canute. And then you've got the later Anglo-Saxons who came over. And so, yeah, we're like a mixture of German, Danish, and that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I think it's possible to do in Europe the Germanic or Northern European group or whatever, you know, and then have the Southern European group and the Eastern European group. That might, you know, divide people too much along these lines, but it kind of makes organizing better. But of course, the best organizers are going to be in the Northern European group, but some of the more passionate people are in the other groups because they get so so bland. In the farther north you go, it seems like in there.
Yeah, there's a bit of a kind of Latin spirit in the south, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean Latino, of course. You know what I mean.
Right.
Not so kind of stuffy, and they'll let their feelings out a lot easier, I think.
Right. Well, I'm. Let's see. We've only got 10 minutes, and probably less than that, 9 or 8. So, what would you like to tell us? And let's remind people about your new show on the White Network. It's just pretty much the same show you've been doing, but it's going to be coming from the White Network, and it's tomorrow at 2 p.m. And of course, then, you know, it'll be available. And you can post it any place else you want if you're used to doing that, you know. And other people do post our programs too. So, we don't want people to forget that. And what else would you like to finish up with?
I'd like to ask you something actually about, Matt Hale.
Okay.
Because you said like that he treats Hitler like a god. But I haven't read Nature's
Are you talking about Matt Hale? I said Matt Hale treats Hitler like a god. When did I say that?
I might have misheard. Well, you know, like the creativity religion he started is like worshipping Hitler.
I don't know if I said that. I can't imagine. I can't think of when I said that. I might have. You know, I think when you mentioned creativity, it makes me think of Craig Cobb.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe I said Cobb and you heard God.
Oh, something like
I don't
that.
Know.
Okay, it was just a question. That doesn't
well,
matter.
Well, what was the question? I'll give it a stab.
Well, I was just going to ask you about it because I don't think that is the case. Like, I think the creativity people are sort of, they believe in a creator, but not the, obviously not the sort of, the Jewish Bible or anything, Judea or anything like that. And although they will say Hitler was a great man, it just I thought he was kind of saying that he's like the center point of the religion.
No, they're very non-religious, except their religion is nature, which I like creativity. And you know, at one time I thought about really getting into it, and I like the people pretty much. You know, recently I heard on some program an interview with the current national creativity leader who lives in Bloomington, Illinois, which I'm quite familiar with that place. And he sounded really good, really good. I liked him a lot, but I don't know I don't have a problem with it. I guess I don't want to be so anti-religion because there's so many of us that identify with the Christian religion, and I don't want to make this big space between us all.
No.
Yeah.
I hope that Matt Hale gets out before too long. I mean, he got 40 years, didn't he? If you look on their website, I was looking at the website earlier, and it specifically says they're non-violent and all this kind of stuff. And he was a trained lawyer. He's an intelligent young guy. And so it seems very much to me that it was false that he was supposed to have tried to murder some Jewish judge or something.
As so often happens, and you brought up earlier, sorry for interrupting you there, but this new leader that I said I liked the sound of him, he did criticize Matt Hale, and well, he said what a good man Matt Hale was, but he did say that Matt Hale went too far, did things he shouldn't have done, and now he's ended up in prison, which does nobody any good. So he was kind of pointing that out, that not to go so far that you end up getting the powers that be so angry that they.
Well, that's a tricky one, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Do you know his name, Caroline? I'd like to look him up.
I don't remember it, but I'm sure you can find it.
I'll look that up. Because my theory...
He's got the headquarters there in Bloomington, Illinois.
Okay. My theory is that it wasn't because he went too far. It was because he was so good. I've watched some videos of him.
Yeah, it could be because I've heard that too. And I never really saw anything much about him. But
if you watch some of his videos... taking on the talking heads, he's so good. And he doesn't need to use, nigger this or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's just the way he says things, and he just brushes the stuff off so well. I think maybe his legal training might have helped. But what a shame when that happens, eh?
Well, I think that's true. I think that's what they do to those who are really good. And that's why it is a shame, because when we get somebody really good, you know what's going to happen to them. They're going to pull anything, and they don't care whether it's legal or not, and neither does the rest of the world, because they use the media to sell the whole thing. And and then our people, and who knows, I might be guilty of the same thing. We don't stand up for these people like we should. You know, we're afraid to. I remember when they went after, we don't have time for that anyway. It's almost time to end the show. But I can't think of his name. Edgar, you know.
Edgar Steele.
Yeah, and then people right away started saying, well, he was guilty. And I'm not sure now. He might be. It all becomes very confusing.
It does.
But I wouldn't put Edgar Steele in the class with probably with Matt Hale. But, we just have to. I'm so glad that you exist, Paul. You sound so good on this show today, and I'm so glad that you're around. And we have people who are quality people, intelligent people, are fighting for this, and we're not giving up.
It's kind of you to say so.
Well, I really mean it, and because it's a discouraging battle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can't be discouraged. I think you're a great spokesman for us, and I'm really proud that you're going to be with the White Network. I hope it's a real lasting and long-lived relationship. We're still got a little bit of time here. Would you like to just say something to the viewers, to the listeners, before we go?
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, I've followed the American situation for quite a while. Mostly because you've kind of pioneered this media, I guess, with the Voice of Reason before, and there's also Goy Fire, Alex Linder stuff, mm-hmm. all very good stuff, and we're in Britain kind of catching up, I guess. Another name, and it's a person I will discuss on the Voice of Albion show, is JT Reddy, Jason Todd Reddy. Mm-hmm. I think people should look him up as well. And, he had a bad end, which I want to look into. But these kind of people, Matt Hale, Jason Todd Reddy, and people like that are very inspirational, I think. And younger people and people in general, white nationalists, should know these names and watch how they deal with the media and how they don't sell out or compromise whatsoever.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Paul, for being on today's show. It's been great. And everybody, remember about tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, and tune in to Paul's new program on the
Thanks,
White
Kevin.
Network. Thank you, Paul. Goodbye, everyone.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyeager.com.